wanted to welcome James, Mr. Williams, here. Congratulations on making it on the podcast.
Thank you all. Just joking.
But yes, we were really excited to do this interview and set it up just because you have some untapped resources that I think will be really interesting just because, you know, hard work ain't necessarily in my
at all. We got to spread the knowledge.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing. So go ahead and just give us some background on you. How'd you get here? You know, just give us the rundown.
Definitely. James Williams. A lot of people know me as JW. And how I got here is the military. First off, I used to be in the military, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. And after the military, I got out and pretty much linked up with my cousin again, who quit a six-figure job and got into the trucking industry. So he walked away from a six-figure job. So after talking to him, he pretty much told me that he was in the trucking industry. Trucking was not my thing. I'm a numbers guy. I got accepted to Belmont University in their accounting program. I used to want to be a CPA. So with that, he pretty much told me, hey, I own a trucking company, and you also can get into this trucking industry without owning a CDL license. So for me, that was the biggest thing. So you mean to tell me I can generate this type of money and not have to go to CDL school nor drive a truck? I was all for it as a businessman.
Okay, so is it basically owning the trucks, or is it just kind of dispatching, like, connecting?
Yes, so it all depends on the person. What we do is all of that. We own a trucking company, and we also do dispatching. That is two separate sides of trucking. Of course, owning a trucking company is very expensive. I lost $70,000 in this industry, so that hurt.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of overhead. I wanted to quit.
I was talking to my dad, my friends, my brother, my mentor, which is my cousin. I just tell them all the time, look, I'm done. If I lose another dime, I am done. It just hurt. Yeah. However, I was just like, stay consistent. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And by me keep going, I'm here where I am today. However, you also can do dispatching. And dispatching is a form of trucking. Mm-hmm. However, the overhead is not there. And that's usually what I teach people how to get into. Why? Because a lot of people want to be entrepreneurs. Okay. But the biggest thing is, hey, what's the startup cost?
Right. A lot of people don't have that initial, you know, $2,000-$3,000.
Oh, it's a lot more than that. You know, COVID, inflation, semi-trucks are literally double the price.
Wow.
You know, about 2 years ago, before COVID really got strong, you can get a semi-truck for $35,000. Mm-hmm. A decent one. That same truck now is between $60,000 and $80,000.
So why do you think that is? I mean, I know inflation and things of that nature, but do you think there's just more demand for it now, or?
I think it's both supply and demand, and also due to parts. You know, once manufacturers start slowing down, parts are harder to get out. And then also, a lot of people are understanding that trucking is a commodity. So because of that, people are starting to get into trucking, which is why you're starting to see more people buying box trucks, which are usually what you see people move with semis. I mean, sorry about that. What people use for hauling as far as U-Hauls.
Oh, okay,
stuff
yeah.
Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So you got box trucks. You see a lot of people starting to get those. Most people understand trucking industry as a semi-truck, which requires you to have a CDL license.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Using yeah. a box truck or using what we call a hotshot, which is a F-250, F-350, a one-ton truck, you're able to utilize those without a CDL license. However, you're capped at how much weight you can haul. I always tell them, on average, semi trucks bring in somewhere around 250,000 to maybe 300, a little bit over 300,000. So I tell them, just rough numbers, when you see three semi trucks, you're looking at almost $1 million.
And their drivers are making like.
Almost what? Definitely. On the low end, we're actually hiring drivers now. On the low end, we pay our drivers $5,400. On the high end, I'll pay my drivers about $7,000.
For a haul?
Huh?
Like for one haul?
For a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, most definitely. And all my drivers are home every weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, for the most part.
See, I think that's also another thing when you think trucking driver, because I know a person who is into trucking, but he did the conventional route where it was kind of like, the company pays for the CDL license mm-hmm. and things like that. And now he hates it because he's in for a year and he has a 2-year contract, but he's being paid, you know, pennies on the mile, basically.
Most definitely. And that's where I have mentorship. For me, it's always about putting people in better positions. Yes, yeah. I'm a CEO, but I tell all my drivers and everybody in the company, you all get paid before I do. Mm. My drivers are expensed before me. So I take that very serious because their livelihood is dependent on me. Mm. So because of that, I'm always going to pay my drivers. You know why? Because I remember when my job didn't pay me and I knew what I brought to the table.
Yeah.
So I have nothing but love for CDL drivers. So with that, anybody I've got on the phone with, they're getting, I pay more than majority of billion-dollar companies.
Mm.
Starting off, I'm paying you some $1,350, $5,400. And then in 90 days, you get another raise. Companies are not, I know drivers who are driving 3,000 to 4,000 miles, not going home for 30 days, 45 days, and not even clearing that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a matter of getting into the industry and changing the dynamics of it.
So just to switch gears a little bit, I did want to talk to you about the Opulent Group.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of give us a rundown on like what is the Opulent Group? And more importantly, how did we get to that name?
yeah, most definitely. So how do we get to the name? I taught a leadership class maybe 2 or 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I did it from one of my favorite companies, Rolls-Royce. I've always been fascinated. I know that may sound so cliche. For me, I am about handcrafted stuff. I'm all about people putting effort, people putting time, and really caring about a product. So I'm big on quality over quantity all day long. And to me, the brand of Rolls-Royce, that is the epitome of that. Everything is handcrafted. People put so much time into their product. So I was watching an interview, and she's like, "You're so passionate about this."
I know I love it though. Like yeah. I'm looking at your face, you're like, "It's intricate," and I'm like, "Yeah,
it is." People go to work and they're lazy.
Mm.
They do. This is just anybody. Everybody wants to be paid more, but nobody wants to put the work in. We value ourselves way more than what we're actually worth.
I agree with that actually.
We do. And this is against nobody who follows me. I get a lot of people to ask, you know, AJW, when guys hiring, I want a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that, it's one of two ways. Are you desperate? Are you really trying to see the company grow?
Mm-hmm.
Are you just trying to get put on? Are you really here to push us forward? There's a lot of people that have their hand out. There's a lot of people that have a story. And business, we really don't care about that, because if I try, and I did it, if I try to help every single person that has a story, I will exhaust myself. True. My company will go under. So I got to understand when to be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be. I'm empathetic all day long. However, if you come to me with a story, then I'm going to tell you, well, what about my story when I lost $70,000?
Because that's a story too.
Most definitely.
That is. No, $70,000, I would be
most definitely livid. And by no means am I a millionaire or anything like that. So for me, it's like you work hard, you save up money and stuff, you start investing, and then you lose it. And this was within a year's time span.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
This wasn't over like a course of, you know, the course of the business. This was a short time span that money, and I'm not talking $50 here. I'm talking thousands of dollars being exhausted every single month. But guess who always got paid?
Your employees.
Exactly. They never missed a check, ever.
But you did. I'm sure you did.
Most definitely.
You did.
Most definitely. Yeah. But no. Back to your question, when you talked about Opulent Group. So I was watching an interview with that, and they were describing how they're building Rolls Royces. And in the interview, they were interviewing those who own Rolls Royces.
Mm.
And to own a Rolls Royce, they don't just sell used cars, right? You have to go buy a brand new. So these people are showing their experiences and going to the factory and doing all this other stuff. And one guy, he said, look, I don't even need a chauffeur. I live 10 miles away from my house. But to be in the back seat, it just screams opulence. And when he said that, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds real good. So no, I had to go. I had to go pull the dictionary out. I think I'm pretty smart, but I've never heard the word opulence. So when I looked it up, it meant luxurious, and I said, So I'm sitting here. I'm like luxurious, fashionable, all this other stuff, and I'm looking at the synonyms, and I'm like, well, I definitely can't. And I wasn't even pulling this from that, but as I started thinking about my name of my brand, I was like, hey, I can't name it. What is me? I'm very minimalistic. A lot of people know that. However, I love nice things. Not to say that it has to be luxurious items, but once again, it's quality over quantity all day long. Mm-hmm. So I said, look, I will look really corny naming my company Luxurious Brand. Mm-hmm. Who's going to take me serious? So I said, you know what? I went back and I was like, oh, opulence. It can't be opulent team. What? Opulent group. And I was like, ah, I like that. So it was just a play on words. And to be honest, that's just my brand. Under my brand, we do a lot of other things, real estate, trucking, dispatching. However, Opulent Group, that's my baby. So
sounds like you have your fingers in a lot of different pies. So you do real estate as well?
I do.
Are you like a realtor, or are you just like a landlord situation? Like,
not at all, because I found a way to get into real estate without having to, you know, go into real estate realtor classes and stuff like that. Right, same way with trucking. I got into the trucking industry without going to CDO school. How can I get into real estate without being a realtor?
How do you do it?
I'm an investor.
Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of people think you got to have all this type of money. For me, everybody, I feel everybody wants the finer things in life. Not necessarily meaning luxurious, but the finer things of having more time, being able to do what you want to do, whatever you define as that. So I never try to define what success is, because that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Whatever success is to you, that's fine. Let's get there.
True.
And what I feel is success, and the way I look at people, a lot of people who I feel are successful have their hands in real estate.
Everybody. I agree. Yeah.
So for me, if I want to get there, I got to implement some of the things that you did that are morally right. And guess what? It's real estate. So for me, how do I do this? So for me, trucking brings in the liquidity for me to get into real estate.
Okay.
To bring in the passive income and to be able to own things. And I feel like that's where we lack a lot as millennials. A lot of that is changing, not even millennials, as people in general. We don't own things. We shy away from ownership. And if you look again, look at families, right? Families with a lot of wealth, guess what they do? They own things.
Mm-hmm. Well, owning things, I think the reason why I'll say millennials, I think we shy away from it because ownership leads to responsibility. No shade. I am a millennial. You're on the cusp, my little baby.
So that means I'm a Gen Z?
You're just on the cusp of Gen Z. You're like in betweener.
Okay. I'm 1998.
Gotcha. I'm a millennial.
Yeah. I am extremely into ownership just because my whole family is like, we rented the whole time. But I'm like, y'all moved around so much. Just own some, stay there. And then buy some other stuff and buy it and then buy it.
But ownership requires a lot of responsibility. So, my grandparents, they owned buildings in Chicago. Mm. They were landlords.
I love Chicago. I just came from Chicago.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Born and raised.
Love Chicago.
It's a good town.
It's one of my favorite cities.
If you have money, it's a lot better. But it's good even when you don't have a whole bunch. But they were landlords. And it took a lot of work.
Most definitely.
And it's a lot of responsibility. You know, if something goes down in that apartment complex, guess who has to fix it? Guess who's on call, and it doesn't matter. Christmas Day, you got to go fix the heat if the heat is out. So I think with that, I think we millennials are very carefree. I just want to have a good time. I just want to relax. You know, it's something about being around for the economic crash and being around from 9/11. We just ball anxiety a lot of times. And so it's like, why put more pressure? So I think that's why a lot of millennials shy away. But I do think as we get older, I'm starting to see that switch where the older millennials are, going into their late 30s. The younger ones like I am, we're kind of like catching up to them. Them 30s is knocking on the door. And so you're getting to the point where it's like, okay, it's cool to have fun, you know, this kind of nihilistic, whatever, everybody's going to be awful anyway, so we might as well enjoy the ride. We're getting to the point where it's like, okay, no, I need a real foundation.
Yeah, too.
Because regardless or not, if this world crumbles, I still need to have my things together.
And COVID should have taught us that. I don't care what you do. COVID should have taught you that. Whether you're in the medical field, whether you went to school 10 years, 5 years, you didn't go to school, that should have taught us that you are expendable.
Yep.
I learned that in the military. Guess what? You don't really care about me because there's somebody else in basic training right now who can come and take my spot. I need to put myself in a position to where I create my own table and you got to come to my table. Yeah. And that's exactly what I've been doing. My dad taught me, in this role, you're either consumer or producer. We all can't be producers. So let's get, everybody cannot be bosses. Everybody cannot be entrepreneurs. You know why? Who's going to buy our stuff?
Exactly.
We all cannot do that. So we need consumers. They're fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all consumers to a certain extent. However, if all you do is consume, you're going to get swallowed up. This is why people hate corporate America. I literally, I'm not going to air his name out. I was out of town talking to a millionaire. And he was a former naval officer. Guess what? He got to the executive position at GE. And guess what he did? He quit.
That's insane.
I got so many people that I know that are ready to leave corporate America. And by no means do they have jobs that are not paying. I'm talking engineers, former executives. They're all leaving. You know why? Because they know all I'm doing is building up your company.
Right.
We come to the table, you take my bright ideas, you make millions off of it, and then we want to argue about a 2% raise.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Where's the logic there? So that's why, you know, we're trying to come in and just change the game. No, I can't compete financially with corporate America.
Yeah.
But guess what? People who know me and people who get on the team, they know I'm solid.
Yeah. I think that it's not, I think the focus isn't necessarily on being like, crazy rich or like ridiculously billionaire status. I'm in the 1%. It's just like getting to a place where you're comfortable and your money is working for you. And you can have, you know, time with family members, time with significant others. If you decide to have, you know, little ones, whatever, you have more time. And I think that that's something I personally learned in 2020 that like, you know, time is everything.
Most definitely.
And what you sell every day when you go into a job is your time. You're not necessarily selling, you know, your body or your work ethic or like what. No, no, no. You're selling time and you're not getting a good deal for your time.
I mean, let's get this. I still got a W-2 job. Despite all I do, I still, so I'm not knocking W-2 jobs. It is what it is. However, if you're going to be on a W-2 job, maximize your time. Like you said, that's what you got to, you can't, if you're just going to work 40 hours a week, going home and spending all your money, guess what? You're going to be broke.
Yep. You're in the rat race.
You are. You're going to be broke. So people always discredit W-2 jobs. And I beg to differ because a W-2 job taught me how to be a boss. A lot of people are so ready to quit. I want to quit. I want to be a CEO. You can't even get to work on time. You don't even like sitting in meetings. You can't even answer emails. So what makes you think that when you become a boss, this is just going to be magical and life is going to change and you're going to start doing all this stuff? As an entrepreneur, you work double, triple more than somebody on a W-2 job. So the grind is a lot harder. Is it more rewarding? Most definitely. However, it's a lot harder. So if you don't have those work ethics and you don't have those skills, it's going to be that much harder for you.
Yeah.
And then if you really don't have a mentor, you're really going to be going in circles. And I was watching a podcast with B. Simone. She said something really well. We're happy on our jobs now, and that's 100% fine. However, who want to be on your job in 30 years? Do you see yourself on your job in 30 years?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, especially from a financial standpoint, we all chase retirement. That's what America taught us, right? Retire, retire, retire. I want to retire, right? Retirement is not an age. Retirement is when you feel like you can continue the lifestyle that you want and you don't have to work a W-2 job. You don't have to. That, to me, that's retirement. And with retirement, guess what? I try to open people's minds up. You put all this money and to all these accounts and all this other stuff, and you're pushing for retirement. But guess what? That retirement check that you're hoping to get in 30 plus years is only dependent on if the financial department for that city or that county manages the money right. Because if they mismanage the money and it's time for you to retire, you don't get a retirement check.
Yep.
There's no money. What are you going to do?
No, that's real. That happened in Chicago, actually. They defaulted on a lot of people's retirements. And it was, of course, you know, your police officers. It was your firefighters. It was your first responders, essentially. And a lot of them ended up retiring, and they did not have checks to fall on for quite some time. And it wasn't until Chicago went back in and was like, hey, we got to pay these people. There's no way around this. You know, they put into the pension fund, because that's the thing, like, you put so much in and your company is supposed to match it. So what happens to the portion that I put in? That was kind of the question that a lot of people were asking. But you will still see, and this is one thing that I definitely hate about America, if you're 70 and you're not going to work for fun, like just to get out of the house, I got serious problems with that. Like,
most definitely.
And I see it all the time. So I think you're 100% correct. Retirement is not an age. And I think that's a little bit how they trick us. I won't say specifically who, but I think that we get tricked.
Most definitely.
Into thinking, oh, well, you know, in 60 years. Well, in 60 years, baby, you done given them the best of your life anyway at that point.
I'm trying to live now.
Yeah, because, like, you know, you've given them your 20s, your 30s, your you know, stronger years. And now it's like, oh, I'm 60. I'm a travel. Where, ma'am? Sit down.
And I tell people, now, do we only live like 2 days a week? Because that's the way society has taught us. And it's really not even 2 days. You really got Saturday. But you may be tired from Friday. So Saturday is questionable. And you really can't do much Sunday. You know why? Because you got to prepare for Monday. Exactly. Yeah, and then you're back at it on Monday. Is that why I'm working? I'm working to please you all, make you happy. And guess what? What happens when you do put in all that work and you retire, but then you don't make it that next year?
Right. Oof.
You know, we don't like to think about stuff like that at all. And that's what you do it for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to enjoy it too.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
You got to. So that's just some stuff, you know, I try to have people think about. If you're not going to take care of yourself without money, you're not going to take care of yourself with money.
Very true.
Oh, that too.
You're going to have a lot of luxurious items, but your health is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to talk to friends.
Yeah. Wealth exacerbates who you really are.
Most definitely.
It shows you who you are. Definitely. Like, people will say, like, oh, you know, wealth doesn't change you. You're right. It doesn't. It makes you more of who you already are as a person. Yeah. So if you were a low-down, dirty person beforehand, you're going to be worse because you have the money to do so, to get away with things. And if you're a good, generous person, chances are that will continue into your wealth. Like, you are more of who you are when you have the money to not care or not be affected.
Most definitely. Money gives you access. I tell people that all the time, whether it's good access or bad access. Money opens up doors, which is why you see certain people with money do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not have been that person before, but guess what? Now that they got money, they can get into these rooms. And once they really get into these rooms and see what's going on, they allow that environment to change them. So for me, that's why I'm really big on who I keep in my circle, who I keep close to me. I don't mind doing business. I don't mind doing business with anybody. As long as you are morally right, we ain't doing nothing illegal, the numbers make sense, we could do business all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want me to do some nefarious activities, and you want me to do something that I'm morally not cool with, mm-hmm. I can care less about the money.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's my name going on that.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost. They start seeing that cash roll in, and those dollars become bigger and bigger. And it's like, you know, dang near sell they soul and they mama soul to get, to get to what they need, to get to what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's...
It's sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. I agree.
People know me personally, so... I'm James without money or with. I'm the same James.
Yeah.
You know, I've matured more and I've been able to help a lot more people out, but I'm the same James. I didn't switch up on anybody. So despite what people see on social media, I mean, my family know me.
Like, no new friends.
Now you got to have new friends because your net worth changed your net worth.
That's true.
So
that's
you got to have some new, I love new friends. I do. Nah, for real, send the new friends.
Yeah, but I think it's important, and it shows that my question really is, what built your values? What has helped you? Is it the military? Is it like...
That's a strong question. I've never been asked that. Oh,
okay, to the podcast.
I see
y'all.
Yeah, yeah.
Enough for you to
yeah.
walk into different places and open those doors and be like, this
yeah.
is still me, you know? What was that?
Most definitely. Well, first and foremost, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
You know, I got to. I don't try to mix religion with business and all that stuff, but this is just me talking. Jesus Christ, for one. Secondly, it's family. Mm-hmm. And two, it's just the experiences, both good and bad.
Yeah.
Everything, mm-hmm. both good and bad. And mentorship. My goodness, I couldn't even tell you all how vital mentorship is.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to give up, but I have people who I respected. Respected. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, oh, you know, no, I respected them. So when they told me to do something, I did it because of the respect I have. And a lot of people forget that. I'm grown. I can do whatever I want. Right. I do this. But guess what? Mm-hmm. You need those checks and balances. And I had that. Mm-hmm. And because of that, to this day, the mm-hmm. checks and balances don't allow me to get out of line. No matter how much money I make, no matter what I get into, no matter how many people follow me, I still have to answer to those checks and balances. And those checks and balances, they don't care about any of that. They're mm-hmm. going to check me. James, you're moving wrong. Why did you say that? Why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. Why are you moving that way? So I know that I have people who are going to check me offline when nobody's around. And they could speak to me a way nobody else can. Mm-hmm. And I respect them for that. Mm-hmm. So based on all those things, that's who made me.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that's how I value my company.
Yeah.
I have to do that. I run my company the same way. I respect my driver. I'm never going to curse at you, and I'm never going to yell at you.
Yeah.
I'm just not. That's just not me. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to show you respect.
Yeah.
But it got to make sense. I'm going to check you, but I'm going to hear you out.
Yeah. So with mentorship, it's like, what's the number one quality you look for when mentoring, if you're the mentor or
Ooh.
Someone mentoring you?
And my mentors, for somebody to be my mentor, number one, I got to respect you. I don't care about your money. I got to respect you
yeah.
as a person.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, I got to see something in you that I want.
Mm.
I got to see something in you that I want. How are you going to mentor me if I want nothing you got? You know, I'm selfish when it comes to my mentor. So I see something, whether it could be some peace that they got. The way they communicate, it's not necessarily financial stuff, you know, just how they move. Guess what? Hey, everybody loves you. How did you get like that? I need that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can pull something from you, definitely I'm all about you being my mentor. As far as me being someone else's mentor, that is a difficult question because I started a mentorship program recently and I held off on it for a very long time. Because I'm a big believer that you got to have a relationship with your mentor. Just because you do something that I like doesn't mean you're my mentor. And we see that now. A lot of people do that. That's my mentor. That's my mentor. Have you met them? No. Do you talk to them? No.
Mm-hmm.
Can you call this person at 1 o'clock in the morning? That is not your mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Your mentor should be able to coach you, to be able to guide you in business and outside of business.
Mm-hmm.
If they cannot do that, that's not your mentor. That's just somebody you like who's doing something you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I take that word very serious, and I didn't want that. I didn't want people to just see me and say, oh, James, you do what I like, and you're my mentor. No, because I don't have a relationship with you.
Right.
So I pushed off one for a very long time. And then finally, I was like, okay, I'm willing to do it now. But I built a relationship with my mentees.
Yeah.
We talk often.
Yeah.
So that's what I look for.
Okay.
Well, no, I want to ask that something to say. So we talked about your experience in the military. We talked about you being a leader in your company, you being a CEO, and the importance of in your values
mm-hmm.
in regards to that. We talked about the importance of internship, but we have not touched on your being an author. Is that
your creative side?
Does that help you as a tool to mentor people?
Yeah, that still blows my mind too.
Mm.
By no means do I consider myself an author. I was in honors English in school.
All right.
I'm really not. I don't like writing all that stuff. I started teaching people how to dispatch, kind of blew up on social media to a certain extent, depending on what people think is blowing up, right? Kind of blew up a little bit. After that, I was doing free Zoom calls.
Okay.
So mind you, the experiences I took, I was given the game for free.
Yeah.
I didn't have a course. This is when like courses were like kind of coming out and people were scamming people. So for me, I didn't want to do a course because I didn't want to look like I was scamming people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was look here. And a lot of people are like, oh, let me guess, you're going to scam us by putting a course. And to my disclaimer, I said, guess what? I don't have a course, but you can get on this free Zoom. And they're like, oh, really? So I started just giving gems about the trucking industry, and I still do it to this day for free on Zoom. After I started doing that, a lot of people were saying, like, look, how can I know more? Because obviously my time is limited. So I try to do Zooms once a week. But for some people, they're like, look, I need more now. So I said, okay. Then I started coaching people one-on-one.
Yeah.
However, that was still the same method, just more personable. So people said, look, James, I need something tangible. Like, I hear everything you're saying is really good, but I don't want to write 3 pages worth of notes. So I said, okay. And I went to the team and I'm like, okay, what can I do? What can I do? And they're like, hey, how about you just do like a YouTube? And I'm like, no, I don't have time. I'm not doing that. That's not my thing. So they said, hey, what about an audiobook? And I was like, no, because I don't want to talk that much. So they said, what about an ebook? And I was like, an ebook. And I'm like, do I got to write it? Like, I'm not a writer. So for me, it caught me by surprise. But what I did was, I'm not about wasting anybody's time. My time nor your time. So on the free Zooms for about a month straight, I said, look, guys, what do you think about an ebook? What do you think about an ebook? And I was starting to get positive feedback. Everybody said, yes, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Now, so I'm not going to do it if you all don't want it because it's a waste of our time.
Right.
Long story short, everybody said, do it. And I pushed the ebook out over the summer. I want to say it was this past July.
Okay, yeah.
I was actually on vacation in Orlando.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, literally. And I did it in 2 days, 3 days. So that is how I came about that. And I'll drop the information to you all first, but I'm meeting with my marketing team once I get out of here. And we were supposed to be pushing a book on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles. So, yeah, yeah, most definitely. So it's going to be way more revamped. I mean, we're literally going to go in on this book. And if people who follow me, people who already got the book, people are making money. So
go ahead and plug yourself. Where can we find the first book so we can get caught up and, you know, really hone in on that second book when it drops?
Yeah, yeah. So my Instagram is mr.jw_. So mr.jw_. And my website is mr.jw.info.
And what's your greatest reward from starting your businesses and things of that nature?
Being in a position to help people. Like, that is always me, although I'm always thinking, if people know, my mind is always on the go. I'm always thinking about the next move. Not that I'm not content, but, like, I got to go get it because miles are dependent on me.
Right.
And I told my mom, and she's like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, you know, I still have stuff that I got to do for a lot of people. People who've known me for a while, childhood friends, you know, all I got stuff I have to do. So that is my desire, is to help people, to show people that normal people like us can get into business and be successful. Yeah. It doesn't take coming from a family of wealth. Whether you're low, middle, or upper class, you can still get into business and be good at it. So that is my biggest reward.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Williams, for coming
you guys
in.
Are welcome. You're welcome.
And chatting with us. Go ahead and let the people know where they can find you, where they can get some books, where they can learn how to dispatch, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, most definitely. Anything with trucking outside of freight brokering. A lot of people always ask me that. No, I do not freight broker, okay? I do not broker freight at all. We dispatch freight and we own trucking companies. So if that is something that you want to get into, you're more than welcome to check my website out, mrmrjw.info, or you can follow me on Instagram, mr.jw_, and you're more than welcome to join in on my free Zooms, DM me, all that stuff. Trust me, you will not be disappointed.
All right.